Good morning, 7:41 here on News Radio 92.3 from Chicago at the Democratic National Convention, but we're still doing our regularly scheduled interviews when we can. Sheriff Chip Simmons, Escambia County Sheriff Chip Simmons, is on the line with us. Hey, Sheriff, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. How you doing up there?
Doing great. I wore a sweater and jeans last night. It was 69. I was cold. Going back and forth.
It's a little cooler here today, too. It's not too bad today.
So my wife's like, I don't want to hear about it. so it goes. We're going to go back a little bit because we didn't talk to you last week because I was on vacation. But there was a shooting near the Little Caesars and the Dollar Tree over on Navy Boulevard maybe a week and a half or so ago. And you found a man with apparent gunshot wounds. And you say, you know, Morgan Lewis had told Pensacola News Journal that you'd found the parties involved and you were investigating it as a self-defense, and it turned out to be a fatality for the victim. But do we know any more about the circumstances around this?
No, we're still investigating it, but it still looks to us to be a reasonable use of force, which means that obviously the individual was being threatened or reasonably felt that their life was in danger. So we're about to wrap that one up. As of right now, nothing's going to change. There will be no charges on that particular case.
And as you have said, just for people who might be listening to the show for the first time, as you have said once, you said it 1,000 times, as long as there's a reasonable belief by the person who is armed that their life or limb or someone else's life or limb is in imminent danger, the use of deadly force is justified, and that's self-defense under Florida law.
That's exactly right. And we talk a lot about, you know, what would we do? And then ours is, again, as we mentioned before, but I want to make sure everyone understands, it's a reasonableness standard. If what you believe was reasonable, then, the tie goes to the runner in Escambia County.
And some of the other things that have happened, you guys, I guess, very weird story about somebody with a stolen car picking up a child that didn't belong to them at a child center or boys club or something like this?
Yeah, this is kind of crazy. We had a 30-year-old lady, Sheree Sturdivant. She first stole a truck. Apparently he was getting gas in his truck, left the door open, and she jumped in and she took off with the truck. Now, he did recognize her as a family acquaintance, but she had no right, obviously, to jump in his truck and steal it. So he reported his truck stolen. A little bit later on, we get a report that a lady had barged into the Boys and Girls Club over there right across the street from the sheriff's office and had taken the child. So now we got a stolen car, a stolen truck, and we have a potential kidnapping. And then our deputies get in the area. We see the truck. We try to stop the truck. And then the truck won't stop. And now we're thinking, again, stolen truck, stolen child. So we pit the truck, and then she again refuses to unlock the door. We had to break the window out. We retrieved the child.
Wait, you pitted the car you pitted a truck with a kid in the back.
Yeah, nice. It's a kidnapping. We were not going to let this vehicle go. I mean,
yeah.
Those things
could
end up very badly. Ultimately, we arrested her and charged her with all these things. The representatives from the Boys and Girls Club said that while they buzzed her in, she assaulted two of the individuals that were working there, and then she forcibly took the child. I don't know the acquaintance of there, but she did not have permission to take the child. She was not on the list to take the child, and they did what they were supposed to, try to prevent her from taking that child, and then reported that to us. And again, our deputies were in the area, did a really good job finding the truck, pitting the stopping the truck, and then ultimately breaking the window and retrieving the child and putting her in jail.
Golly, what a scary how many other ways that could have turned out. As far as the taking of the car, I mean, he was gassing up the car. Was it running? Had the keys in it? Like, how does somebody even do this?
Yeah, you know, it was, it left the truck. It was actually at a service shop. And so he left the keys in the car. The car was running. The truck was running. The door was open. Okay. Stepped out for a moment, turned around and seen who he recognized who it was. So I think he did tell us who it was. But again, no permission to take the truck, and you can't do that sort of thing.
So at this point, I guess we're just viewing it as a crime of opportunity by her. It just seems like such a deranged set of behaviors. So it's hard to put
it all together. Yeah, we deal with that sort of behaviors every day, pretty much.
All right, we're talking to Escambia Sheriff Chip Simmons. Quick check of traffic on the fives with John Pickens. John?
That's right. If you're going I-10 eastbound between Pine Forest and Highway 29, going to see some major delays there from that earlier accident. I'd say about a 20, 25-minute delay. You definitely want to pack your patience with that when traffic is moving slowly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
Thanks so much, John. Back to Scambia Sheriff Chip Simmons. You've shut down another drug house?
Yeah, you know, we started a couple months ago, started counting the number of search warrants, or I call them how many doors we kick, you know, because back in my SWAT days, we would, in narcotics days, we'd kick the door after announcing, obviously. And we started counting them, and we were up to about 34 or so just for the year itself. This particular case, we arrested a 53-year-old convicted felon, Michael McElroy. We broke down or tore down his drug house, ended up seizing 15 grams of fentanyl, 125 grams of cocaine, two firearms, a bulletproof vest. Don't know why you need a bulletproof vest. You know, some marijuana, and about $4,000. So this is a lot of drugs, and this is kind of what we're seeing, that not just a mixture of drugs, but also guns, and that mixture of drugs as well.
Well, I mean, I assume the bulletproof vest is all part and parcel of the, I'm going to be in a situation where I'm going to need to shoot somebody who's going to be shooting at me, and I want to make sure that I have the best advantage. But that's the scary part of being a drug dealer, right?
Well, you know, we talk about a lot of our violent crime majority of our violent crime is associated with the drug trade. And a lot of times we'll say this shooting or that shooting is drug related.
Yeah.
And so if they're drug related and there's violent crime, we typically will see the guns. We typically will see a convicted felon possessing the guns. And then now we're seeing some of these bulletproof vests. And as you said, if you're going to rob someone and, you know, potentially, or if you're going to try to defend your stash or your money, then I'm assuming that may be why they had the bulletproof vest.
I mean, if offensive things can escalate, defensive things can escalate too, I suppose. I have seen that you guys have made some additional arrests or extraditions, one in connection with the triple homicide that was outside the adult birthday party where the three people were shot inside their car. You've got an additional, one or two arrests in that case?
Well, if you recall, that happened, I guess, a couple months ago, and there were three people that were suspects in the case, and our guys didn't forget about it. I think it's happened maybe in April or so, or even before then. And then we ended up arresting a gentleman by the name of Sumler, and we have identified the second one and arrested him as well. So we're still investigating. We're still looking for the third one. I think the important thing here is that our investigators never give up. They, you know, just because it's, you know, some may have forgotten about it. Maybe it's a week ago, a year ago. We haven't forgotten about it. We've ended up making these arrests. Sometimes it just takes time. We have a number of subpoenas out getting information. You know, we go and we interview people as information comes to our attention. And then ultimately we end up making arrests. So in this case, we have arrested two of the three. And then we're still investigating it, trying to get probable cause for that third individual.
And then the other one was the terrible shooting of the elderly woman over on Aris Boulevard that led to the chase where you pitted the car over on the bridge, Highway 90, over into Milton, and then they jumped off the bridge and, you know, the canine went after them. And I think you've got another arrest in that case, too?
We determined that one of the people that were involved in that case, I think it was the one that jumped off the bridge and we retrieved from the water. They were also responsible for a drive-by shooting that happened on, I think it's Paula Avenue. I'm looking through my notes here, but unfortunately,
this is the perpetrator that had died.
No. This is the one that we retrieved. There was one that passed away as a result of the fall. One that we fished out of the water, and then one was heading, you know, down Mexico way, and
okay.
We ended up. So this is the one that we ended up fishing out of the water. And then we later charged him, or we recently charged him with the homicide that took place on Paula Avenue.
Okay, so this is a reminder that, you know, the person who's involved in a drive-by shooting, it's probably not the first time he's ever done that.
Well, that's what it looks like. His name is Etheridge. We end up arresting him. But again, it's tragic enough that the 70-year-old, you know, passed away as a result of the drive-by shooting. And now during the investigation, we determined that one of those people were also involved in the Paula Avenue homicide as well. So yeah, like you said, it's not they're not destroying our community, you know, once. They're doing it more than once, and hopefully they stay in jail for a long time.
Well, and I think it also highlights, combined with you guys continuing to pursue these cases and your relatively new policy of pitting stolen cars, because you find that the stolen cars are often the ones that are involved in these violent assaults, that, you know, prevention to the degree you can prevent it is often a matter of if you stop this bad guy today, you know, that may prevent a crime tomorrow, because it's not like people start to behave better over time, right?
That's exactly right. And you talked about the pit maneuvers. We're adding more of that to our training. We've always trained on the pit maneuvers. We're adding more to that. And I don't know if our citizens have noticed, but our push bumpers are now wrapping around the front of our car so that we can protect our bumpers a little bit more. And the thought there is if we can stop these chases sooner, then there's less risk, you know, to innocents in the roadway, and obviously a quicker way for us to get the suspected criminals.
The last thing I wanted to ask you about, it is a primary day. There are going to be a lot of people going to the polls. Are you guys involved at all in the election security? I'm just not sure how that all works.
Yeah, we've had conversations with the supervisor of elections. We've had conversations with Robert Bender about security. While we don't get into specifics on security for obvious reasons, we're going to be monitoring some of the locations. And then the supervisor of elections for years now have had they've had a really good response and a really good plan, to make sure that the ballots here in Escambia County are counted and counted fairly. So I feel comfortable that with the security measures we have, we'll continue to monitor it. We don't expect any troubles. The Escambia County, fortunately, we do a pretty good job of behaving on election day, and we make use of our right to vote and to decide who's going to run our community locally and who's going to run our country. So
I did say it was the last one, but you made me think of one more, which is, school just started back up, which means that you've got your SROs are back in the schools. And of course you guys are always dealing with, potential threats to schools and all of that. And, Andy Hobbs was on last week with Charles Thornton and had a really good talking about the SROs and the dedication and how they are vital members of the school community. But anything you want to tell people about either back to school safety or child safety or the SRO program?
Well, I think most of this stuff is common sense. We have to do our due diligence, and if you will. And during the summertime, people think, oh, the teachers are out of school, but they're always working. And our SROs are always working as well. We take that opportunity to send them to training to get the latest, training. And Chief Hobbs and I actually went to a last conference we had, and it was all about the Uvalde shooting in Texas, and little lessons learned. And we take all that stuff, and it stuff that may not have been published, just some word of mouth types of, tips. So we take that back here to Escambia County. We were talking about it yesterday about some security at our schools and what our capabilities are and what we could do and would do. And I just want to make sure that all of our deputies know that you go to the contact. You do not wait. You go to, you go to the threat and you take out the threat. And that's, that's pretty much common sense. But we also understand that that's a day-to-day operation.
Absolutely. Well, Sheriff, I always appreciate your time. I certainly appreciate the professionalism and the training and the dedication and the just the general ethic that you bring to the sheriff's office. Thanks so much for the time this morning. We'll talk to you again next week.
You bet. Y'all take care.